Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Hi, Dan. How much of a concern is Jaden's leg soreness going into this week, but also, you know, just in terms of him being able to do everything that he can on the field?
I'm not concerned, Nikki. I'm feeling good going in to the week, and I'm actually feeling good on the team's health. So that's a good thing, you know, when you get to this time of year, you know, heading into the guys and hopefully having some guys back too.
That was Nikki Javala and Dan Quinn yesterday. That's good news on Jaden. I wasn't expecting bad news on Jaden, but had to ask, had to find out, and it certainly appears as if he's fine, and the fact that they are a healthy football team, according to the head coach, is crucial. They got to have the you-know-what loaded to the gills Sunday to beat Tampa Bay. Good morning. Denton's here. I am here. I actually went kind of deep, Denton, into the Dallas game late yesterday and have a lot of kind of upon further review stuff for today's show. We'll also get to Eric Flack, our good friend from Channel 9, at 11 a.m. to talk about Biden at the White House with Josh Harris, Mitch Rales, Mark Ein, and the mayor, Mayor Bowser, signing the RFK bill into law. So when does it become official? When do they take control of the land? When can they cut the deal with the team? We will find out from Eric at 11 a.m. This from Jason to open up the show. Jason writes, Kevin, will a long run in the playoffs kill the chances of a name change? I have no idea, Jason. Maybe. This from Daniel K., who writes, Kevin, I'm a longtime Bucks fan. Baker Mayfield not being a Pro Bowler was a major insult. He had a great year, and he's been a great playoff quarterback. The second part of that was interesting to me because I was like, wait, when has he started in the playoffs other than last year? Well, he started two games for the Cleveland Browns in 2021. Remember, they had a decent chance in the game that Mahomes went out in at Arrowhead to beat the Chiefs and get to the AFC title game back in 2021. They beat Pittsburgh on the road 48-37. And then last year, he quarterbacked in two playoff games for Tampa Bay. I knew that. I had forgotten for whatever reason about the Cleveland games. And yeah, he's actually played very well in his four playoff starts. His teams are 2-2, but the two losses were winnable on the road against Kansas City in 2021 and against Detroit last year. Remember, Tampa was right in that game. And he's thrown 10 touchdowns to 3 picks, 1,153 yards in 4 playoff games, averaging 268 a game in the postseason, and has had a really solid passer rating in QBR. Yeah, he's played well in the postseason. Look, Baker Mayfield's a gamer, man. There's no doubt about it. He's been a gamer his whole life. And to your point, the Pro Bowlers, and I had Denton look this up right before the show started, it's Jared Goff, Jaden Daniels, and Sam Darnold. You know, you can only pick three. I'm sure he was fourth. Was he a first alternate, Denton? I'm assuming he was. Who else would you have had in the NFC?
Yeah, it would have been him or Jalen Hurts, but it would have been Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, because Mayfield did have a phenomenal season. He threw for 4,500 yards. That was third in the league. 41 touchdowns, tied for second in the league with Lamar Jackson, two behind Joe Burrow. His completion percentage of 71.4% was fifth in the NFL. His QBR is down a bit, and that's because he throws picks. He also led the league, was tied for the lead with 16 interceptions, most in the league, with you know who, as Galdi would say, Kirk Cousins. But 16 picks is really the reason his QBR is lower. But Baker Mayfield has been a big part of why Tampa was able to win six of its last seven games. I've got more on the Buccaneers coming up on the show, because I do think that they are facing the best quarterback they have faced probably since they faced Jalen Hurts to start the game. But really, you probably have to go all the way back to the Baltimore game and talk about Lamar Jackson, because since then it was Caleb Williams, it was Daniel Jones, it was, if you want to say Russ, it was Russell Wilson, it was Jalen Hurts in the Thursday night game, and then the stretch since Jalen Hurts in the Thursday night game, Cooper Rush, Will Levis, Spencer Rattler, and by the way, Jake Haener, let's not forget he had one of the worst halves of professional football quarterbacking you've ever seen, which brought Rattler into the game in the second half, and he almost beat us. And then you got Kenny Pickett for, you know, five, you know, maybe seven-eighths of the game against the Eagles. You got Penix Jr. in his second start, and then you got Trey Lance. So really, Baker Mayfield is the best quarterback by far, I think, they have faced since Hurts on Thursday night. Okay, but if you want to go back beyond that, we're really talking about since Lamar, you know, in week six. Baker Mayfield, I mean, the playoff performances last year in the game against Philadelphia, keep in mind, Philly was sinking. All right, they were in quicksand for the last month and a half of the season, and the primary reason was defensively they were a mess. And he threw for 337, three touchdowns in the game in their 32-9 win over the Eagles in the wild card round. And then they went to Detroit. He threw for 349, three touchdowns, but had two picks in the game. But they were right there, Tampa was, with Detroit. Interestingly, Detroit, Tampa's the team early in the season when the Lions were annihilating everybody. They're the ones that went to Detroit and won in week two of the season. You know, they opened with a win over us, and then they went to Detroit and beat the Lions when they were healthy. And by the way, the Lions, remember, started the year, with games like 47-9 over the Cowboys in week four or week five. They beat the Seahawks scoring 40-plus. I mean, they were unstoppable, but the Bucs beat them during that first stretch in Detroit. Kind of crazy to go back and look at that. Mayfield didn't even throw the ball that much in the game. The key to the game was Goff threw two picks in the game. But Baker Mayfield is legit. He is. He is a guy that will absolutely go down swinging. He'll make mistakes, and you got to make him pay for those mistakes. But he's been an outstanding quarterback. I don't know that you could. I guess you could have put him ahead of Darnold. How are you going to put him ahead of Jaden or Goff? Right?
You definitely put him ahead of Darnold, though.
You think it's definite?
I do. Yeah. I think we kind of saw that, didn't I? Mean, don't you feel that way?
I understand that, but in the moment of the regular season before the regular season, I mean, Darnold was fifth in yards. Darnold was 35 touchdowns, 12 picks. Darnold had an excellent season. You know, in many ways, Darnold and Mayfield are similar in that the one difference being Mayfield is a faster decision maker than Darnold, in my opinion.
I think what hurt Baker is they went on that losing streak. So for a while, Tampa Bay wasn't very good. I mean, they lost, what, four in a row?
But it wasn't his fault. They were just they were so banged up.
No, everywhere. It wasn't his fault. But if you think about it from a fans' votes perspective, you have Minnesota that's tearing the world on fire. Then you got this one team that's losing a bunch of games in a row. It's very easy to look at Darnold and say, we're going to go with him. I would take Mayfield over Darnold, though.
I would, too. I agree with you. Now, I'm not talking about Pro Bowl voting. I'm just talking about in terms of the better quarterback. Mayfield's the better quarterback.
Definitely.
Yeah. And let's face it. I mean, Darnold had the best, you know, one of the best skill position supporting casts in the league. And Mayfield was without Godwin after a certain point, was down Evans and Godwin during that stretch in which they were losing games. But they're healthy, not Godwin, but they had, you know, they had the development, obviously, of their rookie wide receiver from Washington, Jalen McMillan, in the second half of the season. Bucky Irving is turning into a star at running back, and they have Mike Evans, Hall of Famer, still playing at a high level. By the way, that still blows me away, what the Bucks did at the end of the game Sunday. I didn't know it until we had our guests, the guys, who was it, Scotty Reynolds?
Yeah, Scott Reynolds.
Yeah, Scotty Reynolds was a Villanova basketball player, I believe. Scott Reynolds was on with us from the Pewter Report yesterday. And that play that you've probably seen the highlight of, the Mike Evans catch that put him over 1,000 yards, again, he is yet to have a season in his very long career, Hall of Fame career, without 1,000 yards in a season. It came on a play in which Tampa should have been kneeing out the game with a 27-19 lead and the division title. I mean, it would have been, Denton, this is no exaggeration. If they had thrown the ball and it had gotten picked, let's say, or let's just say it was incomplete and they tried it again, it was incomplete, and then New Orleans had one timeout left, and then on third down, New Orleans called a timeout, and they got the ball back, and they scored, and they got the two-point conversion, and the game went to overtime, and they won, it would be the worst and most egregious coaching error ever. And it would have fallen on Todd Bowles. It would have been a situation like, you know, what's-his-face from Miami, the University of Miami coach against Georgia Tech last year, where he didn't know he could knee out the game. What'd you say?
I was laughing at that comparison. It's true, though. Imagine, you know, Todd Bowles, you got on him a little bit last year for timeout usage, and I think it was this year, too.
He's not great at this.
He's not. But imagine how he would have attempted to defend that one had that scenario come into fruition where they lose a playoff spot because they're trying to get Mike Evans his 11th consecutive 1,000-yard season to time with Jerry Jones or Jerry Rice.
I know. I mean, the trust he had to have in Mayfield and in Evans at that point. You know, I want to go back and look at the play. Is New Orleans expecting a kneel down? Is that what made the completion easy?
Yeah, I think so.
I need to go back and check that play.
Maybe notice how nobody in New Orleans really fought about it, though, because remember they did that bit last year against the Falcons where they wanted to get what's-his-face, Jamal Williams, a touchdown late in the game, and then the two coaches nearly came to blows. Arthur Smith wanted to choke out Dennis Allen.
Yes.
New Orleans did nothing about it. They're like, all right, he got us 1,000 yards, whatever. That rivalry's dead.
Yeah. Tampa still a three-point favorite. The total has climbed now in the game to 51 in a lot of spots, the highest total of any of the games on Wild Card Weekend. So, you know, what you have here is you have a matchup between two very capable of being great offenses and two suspect defenses. Washington's overall defense suspect. Tampa's pass defense in particular suspect. They can stop the run. That has not been an issue for them, especially here over their, you know, 6-1 stretch to win the NFC South. But teams have thrown the ball pretty much at will against Tampa Bay. All right, when we come back, I got an email from somebody yesterday who brought up the situation that I didn't address yesterday in our game recap, Denton, and that was the penalty against Deron Payne that led to a kickoff out of bounds, and for some reason, Washington got the ball at the 25-yard line instead of the 40-yard line. I'll explain what happened when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. So I got this from JC. JC wrote me and he said, Kevin, I was surprised you didn't mention the Deron Payne penalty and why we started the drive afterwards at our 20-yard line when the ball went out of bounds. Do you have an explanation? So I do have an explanation. And JC, thank you for that. I went and had to look all of this stuff up. First of all, Washington didn't start at the 20. They started at the 25-yard line. But the situation he's referring to, in the game on Sunday, Dallas kicked a second field goal to take a 6-0 lead. After the field goal, Deron Payne got into it with a player and took a swing at that player and got penalized 15 yards. More on Deron Payne overall coming up here in the first hour of the show, because I have a feeling some of you are not aware of something and a bit of a change with his positioning defensively, but we'll talk about that in a bit. Let me get back to this play. So Deron gets flagged 15 yards for unnecessary roughness. There is a shot, by the way, because I talked about this on my podcast, and somebody sent me a shot of the player that he took a swing at, grabbed him in his private areas, in his private area after the play, which is what kind of pissed off Deron Payne. Anyway, 15-yard penalty means Dallas, post-field goal penalty, they're going to kick off from the 50. Brandon Aubrey kicked off from the 50 and intentionally kicked the ball out of bounds. Denton, do you know why he did that?
Because he really didn't like the cheerleader that he drilled?
He did drill a cheerleader. Tress Way, very nice to go over and check on her. But do you know why he kicked the ball out of bounds intentionally? Because it was intentional?
I would assume it was because of the rule that put them at the 25 rather than the 40.
Okay, but do you know what the rule is?
I do not know what the rule is directly.
So this is the part which is interesting. Everybody just assumes when a kickoff goes out of bounds, that means the other team gets the ball at the 40-yard line. That's actually not the rule. The rule is they get the ball 25 yards from where it was kicked off. So when you kick off from the 35 and you kick it out of bounds, the returning team gets the ball at the 40-yard line because the 40-yard line is 25 yards from the other team's 35. But when you kick it off from the 50, 25 yards is the 25-yard line. That's why Dallas kicked the ball out of bounds intentionally, because they gained 5 yards of field position. Typically, Aubrey boots it out of the end zone. All right, so teams start at the 30. Now, you know, well, why wouldn't they have done that last year, Kevin, or at, you know, at some other point? Last year, remember, the ball was, you got the ball to start at the 25-yard line. With the new kickoff return rules, you get the ball at the 30. So Dallas, in a very clever way, using the 25-yard rule from the 50-yard line, intentionally kicked it out of bounds, giving Washington the ball 25 yards from the kickoff spot at their own 25-yard line. They gained 5 yards of field position from normally what they do, which is have Aubrey boot the ball back through the end zone. But in going back and looking up the rule, I found something that was much more interesting than the 25 yards, not just the 40-yard line. And that is that the returning team has the option of taking the ball 25 yards from where it was kicked off or sending the kickoff back 5 yards and having them re-kick it. Clearly, Washington didn't know that part of the rule, because if they knew that part of the rule, they would have had Aubrey kick the ball off from the 45, and that way he wouldn't have kicked it out of bounds, because 25 yards from the 45 would have been the 30. So he would have just kicked it through the end zone, and Washington would have gotten the ball at the 30. So thank you, JC, for making me go back and look at the rule book on this. I did have a sense that it was yardage-based, not just the 40-yard line. I had no clue that the returning team has an option to have the kicking team re-kick it from 5 yards back. So Washington started that drive at the 25 when, if they were better with the understanding of what Dallas did intentionally and what they could have made Dallas do, re-kick it 5 yards back, they lost 5 yards of field position. I thought that was interesting. The other thing, too, I was thinking about as when I went back and looked this up is there was something else I didn't mention in my game take yesterday, and that was Turpin had the ball in his hands on that final kickoff, Denton. We didn't talk about this yesterday. We still don't have a kicker capable of kicking it through the back of the end zone. Zane Gonzalez tried to, okay, indoors, you know, perfect, you know, weather conditions, the perfect environment to boot the ball out of the back of the end zone. He did drive Turpin 5 yards deep into the end zone, but with 3 seconds to go, what's the last thing you'd want to do on the final play of the game? Allow Turpin to have the ball in his hands. We've seen that show already. And then, for whatever reason, Turpin took the ball out and ran out of bounds. I guess he didn't see a crease, he didn't see an opportunity, and they didn't have, if you go back and watch that play, it's not like they appeared to be setting up for some sort of, you know, lateral, you know, pitch it around kind of a play. I think they wanted Turpin to down the ball, get the ball at the 30, and then Turpin would still be on the field offensively, but have their other skill position players on the field for one last play. But still, like, the one thing you don't want to do is kick the ball to Kevontae Turpin and have him hold the ball and have the ability to make a play on the last play of the game. And they gave him that opportunity. Gonzalez did his best to drive the ball out of the end zone, but he couldn't do it. Anyway, I thought those were interesting, special teams plays to discuss, even though we didn't talk about them yesterday. The kickoff rule being the most interesting. Dallas figured out something, and Washington had a counter but didn't know what the counter was or didn't use it for some reason. Of course, if they really knew what the rule was, they would have used it and gained 5 yards back in field position. So, I had somebody call me just to say, you know, you're a Daron Payne fan, and our fans are absolutely killing him for the season he's having. And then he pointed me in the direction of looking at various plays from the last two games. Did you guys know? Denton did know. He said he was talking about it on the in-game show on Sunday. That Daron Payne has been lining up, you know, half the time at defensive end. Daron Payne as a 4-3 D end with John Allen, Johnny Newton inside, and typically Dorrance Armstrong being the other guy on the outside. And I did not pick up on that, but it's happened for a couple of games now. And the reason for it is that Daron is one of the only players capable of setting the edge. They have had a difficult time this year stopping the run, as we all know. They have really had a difficult time on outside edge runs. You know, go back a week ago to what Bijan Robinson did to them. I mean, thank God they held on to the ball in the third quarter and the fourth quarter, and Bijan Robinson only had 3 carries in the second half because Atlanta didn't have the ball. They could not stop him. They haven't been able to stop a lot of teams on the ground. And by the way, you got a big time back in Bucky Irving Sunday night to deal with. But Daron has, you know, they move him around. It's not that he isn't playing inside, because they rotate a lot of defensive tackles. I mean, in the game, let me just tell you right now, 6, Fowler Jr. is not an edge setter. You know, you're not going to see one of the reasons Daron's in the game at D end, opposite Armstrong, or opposite, sometimes it's John Baptiste, sometimes it's Holmes, 96, is Fowler Jr. is really a specialist. You know, he is a pass rusher. By the way, they like Daron as an inside pass rusher because he's actually what they refer to as an influencer on quarterback decisions because of his athleticism and his length. And he tipped that ball that actually Luvu had a shot at. Look, I'm not here to tell you that I think Daron Payne's had a good season. I don't. I don't think he's had a good season at all. And I think that, you know, there are three or four players defensively that have stood out from a positive standpoint, and 94 is not one of them. I'm just telling you that because they have struggled and they recognize their struggle in stopping the run, it's a problem. It's a big problem. And they know it, and they've tried a lot of different things. And in recent weeks, it's been moving the guy that they think has the best chance of setting the edge, Daron Payne, to left defensive end, and having Newton and Allen, you know, easier to do with John back, with Allen back. The one thing that I think Daron has really struggled with this year is double teams. He's not, you know, holding his ground on double teams this year. That's been a big issue. Allen back, he's a little bit better at holding the double teams. But I thought, you know, Denton, when I mentioned this to you before the show, you're like, yeah, we picked up on it, you know, during the game and saw him lining up at defensive end. It wasn't the entire game. It is for portions of it. They are rotating a lot of defensive linemen. Right, I mean, look at just looking at the snap counts for D linemen. So Johnny Newton had 43 snaps. Daron had the most snaps of any of their D linemen on Sunday against the Cowboys. By the way, just kind of tells you, honestly, you know, we can say what we want to say. Daron being out there for the most snaps of any of the defensive linemen tells you that they actually have more confidence in him than they do some of the others. But he's also playing two positions right now. He's playing left defensive end, and he's playing inside as well. And he's playing left defensive end because they consider him to be the best edge setter that they have. I don't know that he's great at it, but based on what they have, they think it's their best shot to stop the run. And I'll tell you, the other thing they are doing clearly, especially against teams that they deem to be one-dimensional from a quarterback perspective, and they've had a lot of those matchups, as we've pointed out, they are really going with heavy boxes on obvious rundowns. And even that doesn't always work for them. It's really, really crucial Sunday night that they get Lattimore back and he's healthy, because where they've struggled up front, they have not made up for it on their back end. You know, it's like we struggle up front, but the good news is we're terrible on the back end. And that's kind of where they've been. They've got to be better on the back end so that they can commit with confidence to stopping the running game. They're committing to heavy boxes, but they're doing it with great risk. They feel, I think, like the risk is minimized if Lattimore's out there and healthy. We'll see, right? Because bottom line is, A.J. Brown kind of torched him in his last game. Two weeks ago against Philly at home. He's had this long-standing rivalry with Mike Evans that I'm sure most of you know as a New Orleans Saint for all those years. So that'll be certainly a sidebar story going into the game on Sunday night. Defense is the problem, and they're trying to come up with ways to improve. We've seen 17 games of it now. The good news is you have a chance to play good defense by playing better offense. They can play really good offensively. They can keep the ball and they can keep the defense on the sideline and keep Baker Mayfield and Mike Evans and Bucky Irving on the sideline. That is their path to victory moving forward Sunday night and maybe beyond. You know, the other way would be for Baker Mayfield to put three or four balls up for grabs, which is not unheard of with him, and you make them pay off defensively by catching them, because there will likely be a couple of throws. Now, I mean, Trey Lance had so many wide open, explosive opportunities. You know, Baker typically throws those picks when he gets frustrated. You've seen it with Baker Mayfield over the years. He gets impulsive, actually. He gets impatient. And he's like, you know, I got to start forcing it because I don't have guys that are getting open. Guys are going to get open against our group, especially if Lattimore's not out there. But I think he will be out there. Certainly hoping for that. But interesting just kind of what Joe Witt Jr. and Quinn and what they're trying to do. They recognize this is their vulnerability. This is what will keep them from winning. And they're trying things. It's not like they're just sitting there. They, looking at the snap counts from Sunday, like if you look at the defensive defensive line. Payne was out there for 55, Armstrong 47 snaps, John Allen 44, Newton 43, Fowler Jr. 33, Sheldon Day 31, Jalen Holmes 24 snaps, Cleveland Farrell 24 snaps, John Baptiste 13 snaps. They played nine defensive linemen in that game, you know, with really only 90 John Baptiste having, you know, an insignificant number of snaps, although he was on the field for 13 snaps. They're trying everything. You know, the other thing, too, is when you have to load the box to stop the run, or in passing situations, you know, you've got your best defensive player. And let's just say that Frankie Louvu, you know, Louvu or Wagner, one of the two of them. I think it's Louvu personally. But with the coverage issues you have had, it's been, you know, they've had to use Louvu too much in coverage. We want Louvu getting after the quarterback on passing situations. You know, that's really where you want him in that Micah Parsons role, lining up all over the place and finding that weak link and getting after the quarterback. But they've had to use Louvu in coverage, which, you know, you don't really want. But you have to because you don't have anybody that can cover. So I guess net-net, Daron Payne playing a lot at defensive end, interesting. The reason being they believe he's one of their best, if not the best, opportunity they have to set the edge. And number two is they have to be healthy Sunday night on defense. They've got to have Lattimore, and he's got to be healthy. They've got to add another good player to the defensive side of the ball, or they're going to give up 30. If Mayfield doesn't turn it over. And you're going to have to match that or exceed that. All right. Dan Quinn said something yesterday about the sacks that they took on Sunday. I had some thoughts on that. We'll get to that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app. Listen to us there whenever you want, wherever you want, and leave us a voicemail message, which you can now do by downloading the Odyssey app.
NFL news to start this update off. The Bears requested to interview Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy's contract expires tomorrow, but the Cowboys hold exclusive negotiating rights through January 14th. They, as of this moment, have not given an official response to the Bears on Mike McCarthy. Elsewhere in the NFL, the Chargers signed former Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott. The Cowboys said they cut him because they wanted him to chase a championship. They also said they brought him in to chase the championship, but that's neither here nor there. Kevin O'Connell says Minnesota is 100% where he wants to be. He has not had a contract extension, despite the fact that Minnesota has had this season that they have. Locally, Wizards in action tonight. They get the Rockets at Cap 1, tip-off at 7. You can hear it right here on the Team 980. The Capitals fell to the Sabres last night 4-3 in a shootout. They're back in action tomorrow against the Canucks. Georgetown in action today. They're on the road against Marquette. Tip-off at 8, pregame at 7:45 on 106.7 The Fan. And that's what's trending.
So Dan Quinn was asked about giving up 6 sacks against the Cowboys yesterday. And if injuries have played a role, Dieter started at center. They lost Brandon Coleman during the game. You know, we've seen, you know, a lot of shuffling along the offensive line in recent weeks. No Wiley. We've seen Trent Scott a bunch. Here was his answer.
And then on your other side, the Cowboys ultimately get 6 sacks. You guys have given up a decent amount over the last month or so. We've also had injuries. No Tyler this game. Brandon leaves. What's kind of the status there for you in terms of why it seems like the number of sacks are going up, and how much are these injuries factoring into them?
Injuries regarding like Tyler's
with Biotish, and you miss Wiley in one game. Coleman.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I couldn't get it with the sacks. I wasn't following. Honestly, I thought in this last game, Ben, three of them could have not been sacks. You know, get the ball out, throw it while you're on the scramble to go. So they weren't all, in a traditional sense of in the pocket to go. Now, what I don't love also is the negative play that comes with it, on the early downs that goes into second and 15 or second and long, because then it kind of changes how you have to call it. So those are definitely the early down ones, Ben. We've got to get that out of our game.
Yeah, you do. And he's referring to actually both quarterbacks in this game, but he's referring primarily to Jaden in the first half. So went back and looked at some of these sacks, because this has been an issue a little bit. Like, Jaden takes a lot of those, 1 yard scramble out of bounds, 2 yard sacks. And it's like, throw it away. Let's play second and 10 instead of second and 11 or second and 12 or second and 14. Real quickly on the sacks, the first one for Jaden comes on the opening drive. It's 3rd and 3. They went drop back here. They went drop back a little bit too much for me in the first half. It's a 4-man rush. Nobody's open. And he takes a big sack. So that is actually my fault. The first sack is the first snap of the game offensively. He got sacked twice on the opening drive. It's a 4-man rush. Nobody's open, and Parsons gets to him. Parsons, was wreaking havoc early in that game. Parsons lining up, by the way, on the second sack right over Dieter. That's what they do defensively. They find the weakest link and they put Parsons over top. So it's 3rd and the first sack to me is not on Jaden at all. It's a 4-man rush. There's nobody open. He gets sacked by Parsons. The 3rd and 3 on that first drive, it's a 6-man rush. They're coming. And Parsons lines up over Dieter. And he beats him right away. But Terry's on an underneath crosser. And Jaden's got to hit that. The ball's got to come out with anticipation. He does not have a chance to really scramble from this one. Parsons beats Dieter immediately. But because it is 6-man pressure, man across, and Terry's coming wide open on an underneath crosser, you got to throw that with anticipation. And Terry's off to the races. So that was one where I thought he could have gotten rid of it. And then on their second drive offensively, hold on for one sec. Let me just find this. It might be the 3rd drive offensively. Jaden takes a loss of a couple of yards on a play in which he's at the sideline. He's pressured. Nobody's really open, and so he's flushed right, and he runs out of bounds a couple of yards behind the sticks. Throw the ball away. We've seen this. He's got to learn at that sideline. And, he did the thing where he just kind of went sideways with a quick step out of bounds. He's got to know that he's on the verge of taking a lost yardage play. Don't do that. Don't take a lost yardage play. That's not, that was a 4-yard lost yardage play. It was 2nd and 15 because they had had a Bates holding penalty that had derailed that drive to begin with. But it's 2nd and 15. That was a 3rd and 15. I'm disorganized on this because I have my notes here and they didn't sync up to the play-by-play like I usually do. Sack number one, sack number two, opening drive, okay? One of them, he's got no chance, the first one. Second one, it's a quick pressure because Dieter gets beat by Parsons, but he does have Terry on an underneath crosser if he throws with anticipation. The third sack comes on their second drive, and it's third and 15, and he takes a four-yard loss on a play in which he could have easily thrown the ball away, saved 4 yards. They're going to punt, but he also had McCaffrey off schedule if he guns one. McCaffrey for a split second is wide open down the field 20 yards on the extension by Jaden. And then the last sack that he took is another one on second and nine where he gets out of bounds and he's a yard short of the line of scrimmage. We've seen that over and over again. It was one of the things I emphasized a lot during the offseason, that if you really watched LSU rather than red box scores or red PFF reports, you understood that he didn't have a lot of sack yardage with the sacks that he took. And a lot of those were him just scrambling back to the line of scrimmage or scrambling and flushed right and getting back to the line of scrimmage or a yard short of it. He needs to do a better job of unloading the football to save some of that lost yardage. He should. By the way, also, just, you know, as a sack should be a sack, right? If you're scrambling and you end up back at the line of scrimmage for a 0 yard gain or a 1 yard loss, it's not really a sack, if it's on the edge especially. But the NFL registers that as a sack. Next up was that horrible drive. Marcus Mariota and the offense in the second half had 4 possessions. They scored touchdowns on 3 of those possessions. But on the one possession where they didn't, it was a disaster. You know, Mariota he kind of stumbled and bumbled on a first down play from the 30, where, you know, it's play action. And I think it was Coleman who completely got beat and they're to the inside, and there's an immediate pressure and he goes down. Does he have an opportunity to get rid of the football? Potentially, but these immediate pressures with this offensive line, I think, are more of a problem than Dan's mentioning. But you get that first sack, there wasn't really an opportunity on the first one, and then you get the 2 plays later, you get another big loss. He had 25 yards of lost sack yardage on within 3 plays. And this is the one in which he's, you know, moving around, flushed right, flushed left, and he does have an opportunity to certainly get rid of the ball outside the pocket and save the lost yardage. It's not like there's a lot open, but he takes a big sack when he could have easily thrown the ball out of bounds. And instead, it's a 15-yard loss. By the way, on a play in which Allegretti got called for holding, too. So it's kind of Mariota's second sack and 2 of Jaden's sacks that Quinn's referring to. And yeah, you've got to save yardage as a quarterback. When you're outside of that pocket, you've got the ability to throw the ball away. And they had ample opportunity on 2 of Jaden's plays and 1 of Marcus Mariota's sacks to do that, and they didn't do it. That's 15 yards, and they were punting from their own 14-yard line rather than punting from their own 29. That's pretty wild, though, to lose 25 yards on 2 sacks within 3 plays. That's big sack yardage on those 2. And look, no help from the offensive line. When Quinn says, honestly, you know, and he says, I thought in this game, 3 of them could have been non-sacks. He's talking about 2 of Jaden's and 1 of Mariota's. But he also didn't answer the question about injuries up front playing a role. And they did. Both things are true. But Jaden's got to do a better job. I mean, Mariota's a veteran. Jaden's got to learn when he's flush and he's trying to make a play and he's going to go out of bounds to take a hit, just chuck the ball out of bounds. Let's save, you know, 1 yard, 2 yards, 3 yards. You know, especially as Quinn pointed out on early downs, 2nd and 10's a lot better than 2nd and 13. You know, sacks, lost yardage on early downs, you know, are the biggest drive killers in football. Penalties aren't. Penalties are drive killers, but they're not nearly as bad as sacks, because with sacks, you lose the down as well. With penalties, you usually keep the down. You know, so a hold on first and 10, it's first and 20. A 5-yard sack on first down, it's second and 15. You'd rather have first and 20 than second and 15, especially with Jaden at quarterback. Some of the things that, you know, we can certainly nitpick in terms of the rookie's historic season. But I'm sure these are coaching points. You think back to the opener against Tampa Bay. What was the number one thing discussed coming out of that game? He ran the ball 16 times for 88 yards. It was, he's doing a great job extending the play, but he's got to keep his eyes down the field before he crosses the line of scrimmage so that he can be a passer when he extends the plays. I think we saw massive improvement after that opener on that. And there will be massive improvement on some of the things that Quinn's referring to here in the offseason. Be nice to see it on Sunday night. Look, he's our shot. He's the chance they have to go on a run here, certainly to win the first game. All right, yesterday, the president, Joe Biden, signed into law the RFK bill. So what's next? Our good friend from Channel 9, Eric Flack, will jump on with us to discuss. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.